9:05. Welcome back to the Chad Hastie Show. News Talk 790 KFYO, 770-5790, toll-free 1-800-687-0790. First voice you hear from when you do dial into today's program, Ariel Walden on the other side. Larry Williams coming up at 9:35. He'll be taking your automotive questions. We'll get into all the fun Wendy Davis news in the 10 o'clock hour. And LISD being sued because they didn't put up a, one particular advertisement. So we've got all of that coming up in the 10 o'clock hour. Right now we get to take a look at, a little bit of the State of the Union speech and things that have been thrown out even before the State of the Union speech about upward mobility, minimum wage, savings accounts, all that kind of good stuff. Dr. Ben Powell with the Texas Tech Free Market Institute in studio with me. Welcome back.
Hey, Chad. Good to be back with you.
I appreciate you coming in today and taking a look at some of the things that the president mentioned last night. He's been mentioning some of these ideas for a while now, particularly with upward mobility, income inequality, and he connects the two. Where we've seen in the past that may not necessarily be the case.
Yeah, I think it's actually important to connect the two, because if we talk about inequality without talking about mobility, it's missing a big part of the picture. I mean, we're sitting here in West Texas, so everyone knows horses don't fly, right? Mm-hmm. But if we took a picture of a horse at a gallop, you could get a picture with all four hooves in the air. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm from Boston originally. If I took that picture back there, not everyone's seen horses run, maybe we could convince some horses fly. Now, that's like looking at income inequality as a snapshot in time of the distribution. Instead, you need a movie of that horse galloping, and then you see, no, it's actually running on the ground. And all the same thing's true about mobility. We need to know how people move through income groups to know whether this inequality stuff means anything significant to us.
So big picture, how does upward mobility work, big picture?
Big picture is people move between income groups throughout their lives. Typically, when you're a young person, you're in the bottom, fifth of earners or so. It's true of recent college graduates too. As you go through your 30s and 40s, your incomes rise, and then eventually it peaks somewhere in your 50s and declines after that. Eventually you retire and quite often end up, now we're measuring income, by the way, not wealth.
Right.
You end up back down in that bottom fifth as you're retired and not earning much, but you might have a lot of wealth. So sometimes just looking at that income inequality is very misleading. Sometimes it's wealthy older people who are in that group. So typically people go through this kind of life cycle of earnings.
When you hear politicians, when you hear the president talking about we can solve upward mobility, that people aren't moving between, the poorest of the poor to the middle class, they're not going to the wealthy. I mean, not everybody does that anyway. They don't go from the poorest of the poor to the wealthiest of the wealthiest. But is it just playing to a base or to a small segment out there when they say this is only because you're not making $10.10 an hour?
Oh no, the $10.10 thing is absolute BS. If they want to increase income inequality, pass that law, we'll get more unemployed young people who never get that first job and start going through the life cycle of right. earnings. And the notion that the mobility has got worse in the U.S. is just BS. There was a new study came out of Harvard just recently that looked at income mobility over the last 60 years in the United States. And they find it's no different now than it was at any time in our past. Mm-hmm. Mobility has stayed about the same. Now, that said, I do think there are real issues that prevent people from being upwardly mobile, particularly inner city minorities who really get hammered by existing policies. But it's nothing about our free enterprise system that keeps them down. It's lousy government schools and a war on drugs that arrests a huge percentage of young black people before they ever become 21.
Right. And so how do you solve all that? Does it come down to adjusting the current laws, the current policies, and actually getting good policies in, which have been around for a while, just did not kick in within the last few years?
Yeah, you want me to drop some radical bombs here on the show, Chad?
I'll do it. Go ahead.
Yeah, so you want to fix the mobility problem? Forget incomes, policies, minimum wages, all of that. We need to get to a privatized school system that more efficiently delivers education, both in suburbs and particularly in inner cities. And we need to end the U.S. government's insane war on drugs that leads us to be one of the leading incarcerating countries in the world.
Yeah.
That will fix our income mobility. Or I'm not going to say that we have a big income mobility problem. To the extent we have an income mobility problem, those two things would do more to address the real issue than any of this other dinkering with minimum wages or incomes of jobs policy.
But that's not going to happen. Those two things are not going to happen, and not happen anytime soon. it's almost as though, and we've talked about this before on the show, current policies, those are the things hurting people. Mm-hmm. And those are the things that keep people where they are right now.
Yeah, I agree. But I also think it's important, Chad, for, you know, people like you and I to get there and talk about things that aren't politically possible today mm-hmm. to make them politically possible tomorrow.
Yeah.
And when it comes to the war on drugs, we're seeing movement in that direction, of course, with marijuana legalization going on state by state. And hopefully, as people realize, gee, it's not become reefer madness in some state that's done this. This will spread and it'll let us start questioning more things about the war on drugs so that we can get there. So I think it's important that you and I keep talking about this.
Yeah, absolutely. Visiting with Dr. Ben Powell, Texas Tech Free Market Institute. One of the things also we touched on it a little bit, the minimum wage brought up $10.10 an hour. That's what the president's pushing. He signed an executive order for new federal contract workers that they would get $10.10. Why is that not going to work? I know we've talked about it before, but raising the minimum wage, why does that not work overall for the United States?
We can't legislate prosperity. So all you can do with the minimum wage is outlaw potential gains from trade for people. There are some people who, unfortunately, their productivity is less than $10.10 an hour, particularly young people and minority youths. Those are actually the hardest hit by this, which is no accident why we see youth unemployment rates higher than everybody else. And when we legislate this, it just means that no one was willing to hire them. Instead, they replace them with more expensive, more productive workers or machinery, and they don't renew people as jobs turn over. The $10.10 one will have this effect on some people. It's not as bad as if they raised it to $20 an hour or something like that.
Yeah.
But the principle behind the same reason why we can't raise it to $100 an hour is maybe even you and I don't have a job anymore then. For some people, that level is much lower.
Mm-hmm.
And politicians always dinker with this in some range where it's going to unemploy some people, but it's not going to be a mass layoff. Instead, people just won't rehire when people quit their job or something like that.
Right.
So we don't see a big impact of it, but it's still negative and it's there.
Visiting with Dr. Ben Powell, the MyRA was brought up yesterday. It's a whole new thought process from the federal government. And I'll just read to you what CNN Money had to say about it. Again, not many people know the details of all this. The White House hasn't released details. But what they said basically is Obama calling them MyRA said that he would, by executive order, direct the Treasury Department to create them. Details scare us, but employees would be able to contribute part of their wages to savings accounts, which would be backed by the U.S. government. The president said during the speech, it's a new savings bond that encourages people to build a nest egg. MyRA guarantees a decent return with no risk of losing what you put in.
Decent return and no risk. Yes, with the stroke of a pen, he's going to eliminate risk. Do you smell something here? I do. So he can no more eliminate. What he can do is say, if you don't get good returns in this, we'll go and steal money from other taxpayers and give it to you.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't eliminate risk. It changes who bears the risk.
Right.
And now it's the other taxpayers who bear the risk. But even for the savers, I'm not buying that this is no risk for them putting money in it.
Yeah.
Think about what the long-term trend of our government spending and entitlements are and is. Am I buying the fact that they're going to have more money that they can come in and pay me in these accounts if the investments don't turn out when they already are going to go broke on Social Security and Medicare? I don't think so.
Is there a chance that this is – because there are people on both sides of this who are going, okay, maybe this is a step towards privatized Social Security accounts, which Republicans have talked about in the past, but that would be private Social Security accounts. Now you have something backed by the federal government. Could this be an opportunity for the government to get their hand into savings accounts and nationalized savings accounts? And if that happens, what's the risk?
God only knows, Chad. How could it go in the future? I could imagine it going either way, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it could be that it depends on future politics. So Social Security is going bankrupt, but this program's existed for a while. There's a bunch of money in it. You could get a future president who says, let's steal money out of those accounts and try to shore over Social Security. Or you could get a guy who says, hey, you know what? We can end Social Security now because look at these other people have saved up money in the accounts. It's not going to be as important going forward. Let's just pay some of the existing beneficiaries out of current tax revenue and just end the program.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, who knows?
Sounds like a big risk.
Who knows? Yeah, for all of us, right?
Sounds like a when the president says no risk, I don't know about that.
Tell you what, for, as a practical matter, I'm going to leave my money in an IRA and my 403B.
Yeah, not going to get involved in my RA.
Yeah, when Obama tells me he's got a good deal for me, I grab my wallet and run the other way.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are with you on that. Tell folks a little bit about the Free Market Institute over at Texas Tech. I know y'all have a speaker coming in February, correct?
Yeah, so one of the things that we do at the Free Market Institute is sponsor talks for the general public, students, staff at the university, but everybody in the Lubbock community as well. On February 18th at 5 o'clock, we have the 2002 Nobel Prize winner in economics, Dr. Vernon Smith, coming into Rawls College, and he'll deliver a lecture. I believe it's titled something like, "What Have We Learned About Recessions, Housing Bubbles Since 1931? So he's going to talk about the most recent bubble that we've had. And he actually has studied these things. What he earned his Nobel Prize for was creating something called experimental economics, where they puts people in a lab and they pay them based off how well they do, and then they study different economic behaviors. And he's actually studied financial bubbles in the lab, so he's going to tell us how this relates to the real world. And I'll give you a couple clues. People can form irrational bubbles all on their own, but if you get government shooting money into, or excuse me, he's not government in the experiment, when he sticks money, extra money in the experiment, it's more likely to get unrealistic bubbles.
Ah, very interesting. Very interesting. Looking forward to that. That's February, what, 18th?
February 18th, 5 p.m. in the Grand Auditorium in the Rawls College of Business.
People just need to show up?
Just park there. Parking restrictions will be lifted. Park, come on in, and there'll be people pointing you in the right direction.
All right. Dr. Ben Powell, how can people find you online?
You can find us at the Free Market Institute website, fmi.ttu.edu, or you can just find me at benjaminwpowell.com.
Okay. And I think one thing we can take away from this, from Dr. Ben Powell today, that the My RA accounts, take your wallets and run, right?
Take your money and run.
Yeah,
I'm not going to say it, though.
Get away. Stay away from the My RA. We can barely even say it without getting tripped up.